Welcome to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I'm here with Phil. I want to hear about his journey into Bitcoin, about his experience with our communities on X, about your thoughts about Bitcoin in general. I saw an interesting post that I would like to talk about. And we're also going to cover the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve today, because that just happened a couple days ago. So, Phil, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm just regular club, regular house, regular, well, I was going to say regular job. I do work for myself, but we'll go into that at some point, I'm sure. 48 years old, into my sport, into football, into, I would say, probably more training now as a result of things around Bitcoin that got me back into training. But yeah, just a normal, everyday, regular. With a bit of a rebellious side, possibly, but yeah.
Well, that's what I want. I'm a regular pleb. I'm a regular person. I just wanted to have a casual podcast that, you know, most of us can come up and talk about our experience with Bitcoin and our journey, and just not feel intimidated and just talk in a regular space with a regular person like themselves and not feel, you know, like it's just intimidating. So hopefully this is going to be a great experience for you. And I'm really excited to hear more about your story. But like, I love that you said you are self-employed. Is that what you said?
Yes. We sort of background of our family is that everyone is self-employed. If that so I'll try and explain. But my father, all my uncles, they never ever worked for anyone throughout their whole lives. They were always self-employed in one way or another. My father, in his earlier years, he always had a keen interest in cars. So he always used to buy cars, fix them up, sell them. And that's how I remember when I was a kid. That's what my father did. He bought cars, spent hours and hours in the garage, and ended up, someone would come to the house with a wad of cash and start counting out on the breakfast table. And sold another car, then he'd go on to the next one. And that's how he earned a living then. So they would always do whatever they could do to earn a living, to keep the family going, to keep the food on the table, roof over the head, everything. So, and it was all back then, it was usually all cash as well. Taxman didn't necessarily need to know too much about it. But after that, he went on to something else then. He actually went into finance, to secured lending. We'll go back to that. But my self-employment is myself and my brother run a company. It's online only. It's not a shop. I can say what we do if you want, but it might not be everyone's taste. It's those electronic cigarettes.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's great, yeah.
We were one of the first in the UK to do it, actually. It was back in 2006 we started. Started very slowly because nobody knew, a little bit like Bitcoin, actually. Nobody knew a thing about it. So we had to try and get it out there to get it sort of popular, and it picked up and became really, really busy.
That's great.
But that was up to a point where we could advertise. We were allowed to advertise. But since 2014, there was a ban on advertising for electronic cigarettes or promotion of any kind, because they basically lumped us in with tobacco. So
that's since 2016, you said?
2014, that's 2014. Been. So we've operated since then without being able to advertise at all. But in the early days, we were spending about £500 a day on Google ads and things like that. So we just worked to retain the customers we had, because we gained a lot through that. And that's what we do now, is just retain customers, and we get recommendations, and it sort of works that way.
And it is just that part of the reason? Was that a catalyst for you with this new advertising rule that Was that something for you that you felt like it was hurting your business and you decided to look for options, kind of the way that a lot of us did, where we felt like our business was being hindered its growth, and we decided to look for an answer, something that could help us grow our way out instead of depleting
Yeah, I
Peter.
mean, me and my brother are both similar thinkers. We're both, I would describe it as I don't know if we don't like to conform. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but maybe we don't like the unfairness of things. So for instance, lumping us in with regular tobacco seemed like an unfair thing to do because, for starters, there's no tobacco in it. It's just the nicotine element. And we all know why they did that. And that's to save, because the tobacco companies lobby the MPs and they get the rules they want because they got the money to do it. So there's kind of an injustice in that
Yeah,
happening.
I feel like that a lot with lobbyists and the way that our government works here. It's like the people with the most money are able to, promote the things that they want to promote. And it's not necessarily good for us or better for us, but they just want to push their own agendas, which is something that I am also a rebel in that way, where I don't like to follow that.
It sort of makes you distrust politicians, and I think that's because it's been so rampant and obvious over the last 3, 4, 5 years, particularly through COVID as well. It's put that distrust at an all-time high, I think, especially in this country. In this country, it's really bad. You at the moment have got. I mean, I don't know which way anyone votes or anything, and you might be happy or not happy, but you've got Trump. And over here, we see that as a good thing, even though you're probably told every day we think Trump is terrible.
Yeah,
But
you know what
it,
it does feel like that. Like you don't know what to believe because I feel like as an American, you think the rest of the world hates America or, they're just not happy about anything going on here really, and they think that. But I think people realize globally that our government has been a propaganda machine and they're tired of it. It was about Bitcoin and real money and how's the government going to stop inflation and this excess spending, and I heard nothing from the Democrat side of things. So I was very concerned about that. Also the free speech thing was important because you get government to decide to draw a line on what's okay to say and what's not okay. And then
it's terrible.
where do you stop the line? How far does that line go? And then that really worried me too.
I think that, particularly in this country, probably in your country as well, the argument of the left, there's no real argument. But instead of having an argument, they make the other guy out to be the monster. So instead of making a good argument for what they want to do or for the things that they do, instead, they think, well, that's a struggle. So we'll make the other guy out to be the monster. And I think that's what's happened with Trump, that you had the Democrats making him out to be this monster that I don't think he necessarily was. I'm sure he's no angel. He's probably not perfect. Who is? And he's
Oh,
probably
yeah.
done a few wrong things in his life. We all have. But the way they were making him out to be this in collaboration with Putin, this. All this spying stuff and various other things. All the court cases conveniently come in when, he decided to run for president. And I don't think it's the case. And I think it's that again puts a massive amount of distrust from the people then in the politicians that are in power and the ones who are supposed to be looking after their interests.
I wanted to hear what is the plan, and I wasn't hearing a plan, so that scared me. And so now I think there's still some things, that with the cleaning out of government, agencies and finding all this theft, it's surprising to me even now that as all this theft is being discovered, for example, the Pentagon is supposed to get audited and they haven't passed an audit in at least 7 years, and
Yeah.
that's crazy because they're the Pentagon. How do they not have
Well,
records of everything? Like it's insane. They haven't been audited, and I feel like, it's just wild to me that people are complaining about the Republicans or about Trump, and instead of just saying, "Wow, yeah, this is weird that, we don't know where all this money went." Why don't you at least admit that? Because that's true, and that shouldn't be. And it's you're obviously trying to protect the people that are stealing from that system, and we're all about kind of getting rid of that theft from that system. So.
Plus, an audit is a perfectly, well, it should be, it's a perfectly normal thing to do, especially in the public's, when it's the public's finances. It should be audited, and it should be audited regularly. But the fact that something's not audited for 7 years, 10 years, yeah, that's the unusual thing, not the fact that you actually want to audit it. One audit we're all looking forward to, though, I think.
Yes. On the
Thank
other
you.
hand, you could tell people about Bitcoin's audit, how often that happens.
Every 10 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. So it's a transparent network, and it's for everyone to see, and to see that everything's verified constantly, and it's not something to be thinking that it is linked with other cryptos and other exchanges. Bitcoin is different. Bitcoin is transparent. Bitcoin is spread throughout the world. It is decentralized, and it is a system that has never gone down. It's never gotten hacked. Whereas today, we've even had X get hacked for many, many hours today. So that's been
Oh, yeah,
wild.
see, perhaps the likes of XRP, which starts at Genesis block 30,000 something, I
Oh, yeah.
think, due to the others just being mislaid somewhere.
Isn't that funny? They say that. So with Bitcoin, every single block is available. XRP, people are raving about XRP, but these blocks, the initial blocks are all missing, and that's the entire point of a blockchain, is so that everything is transparent and laid out in front of you. So what kind of schemery or I don't know, theft or what's going on with this system that the few that hold the most amount of the supply are manipulating these initial blocks for whatever reason. So that's why you can't really trust people when it's not decentralized, because that just means that there's a small percentage of people that hold the majority of those coins. So, and they're obviously they have missing blocks. That should not be the case with a blockchain. That's the whole point of a blockchain.
I think the XRP people I've spoken to on X, well, I say spoken to, I mean I've posted on a post. And then usually an XRP person comes up and says, as a bit of a rant at you, tells you why Bitcoin is, of course, useless.
Yeah.
And then try to insist that XRP is truly decentralized.
I don't understand that. I think it's just that people that think that they can keep telling people that they will convince people, but obviously people
Maybe.
like us that have studied Bitcoin and understand what Bitcoin is, we can't be dissuaded or manipulated on what Bitcoin is, because it's just you're barking up the wrong tree. Like, we're not gonna
Well,
care. No.
true decentralization is that nobody controls it. Nobody can change it. Nobody can mess around with it or turn it into something else. And that's just not the case with XRP because Ripple Labs own it. Brad Garling, I keep forgetting his name,
Garlinghouse.
I call him Garlic Face, but yeah.
Yeah, Garlinghouse, I think.
And all they do is actually sell XRP. They don't buy any,
Great.
they just sell it.
I don't understand the argument either, and I think that's why it's important for us, the new generation of like we're considered the newer Bitcoiners. We're starting to speak up. We're starting to have our own channels in our communities on X. And I know for so many years early on, I don't know what year you got into Bitcoin, but for me it was around 2020. What year for you?
Well, started talking about it in 2016.
Okay.
Started talking about it more end of 2016, early 2017. I think 2017 is when I
Okay.
started buying some.
Okay, so you're a full cycle ahead of me. So by cycles, we talk about every 4 year halving for anyone that doesn't know.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin supply, whatever total amount of Bitcoin there ever will be, the 21 million, the first half of that supply came out at the very beginning. Every 4 years, whatever's remaining comes out. like whatever's left, half of that comes out. So it's called a halving. So he's been in it for a full halving more than I have. So, but this cycle, I feel like we're the ones who are stepping up. We've been talking about it. Part of it, we got like, I think as far as myself, I got a little burnt out trying to talk to people about it. But I feel like knowing that more of these coins are coming out now after what happened with the rug pulls back in 2020, 2021, I feel like it's important for people to understand that that's gambling and Bitcoin is different. And I think it's important for us to speak up and share, because the people that have been in the space longer than we have, and they have huge followings, and they're speaking at conferences and they're speaking on CNBC. All those people are busy, and they're busy doing big things, talking to, they've worked their way up to talk to the biggest names in Bitcoin, but we are here for the regular people to try to teach them so that they don't make the same mistakes, hopefully, that we did. And just spread the word, because I don't feel like we really understood that. A lot of us got tricked. So I think that it would be important for us to speak up and just spread awareness about that.
It is actually on that. It's important to have someone to speak to sort of bounce off when you first start learning about Bitcoin. And I was really lucky in that respect, because it was really because myself and my brother worked together. We used to have an office and a warehouse, and we used to go to the office every day for work, and we'd just talk to each other across desks. And it was him who brought up the Bitcoin in the first place and started talking to me about it. And I sort of just dismissed it as some sort of weird token on the internet that people are trading, like a trading card, or I thought it was something like that. So it was really good to have him to talk to, because I might not necessarily have come across it myself. And we sort of got talking about it that way. Developed and learned more and more and more, and the more you learn, the further down the rabbit hole you go.
Yes, for sure. No, that's how it felt for a lot of us. I think that's how it felt for me too. Like you just hear about it and I think certain things lead you down the path to find it, where it's somebody who's been telling you about it, or you're just trying to learn more about it. Or there sometimes I found that even in some of our spaces when we've been talking, some of us have found Bitcoin because of the same interest that we're into science, into mathematics, into physics, and we're about learning about the world around us and the universe, and just have questions about how and why we're here, like sort of things. And I think when you find out about things in physics, and then you find out about Bitcoin, and you realize that there's things about Bitcoin that connect with, it's all mathematics, it's, mathematics or nature. And I also feel like the whole finding out just about like truth, is like something that a lot of us have in common. So when we discover Bitcoin, it's something that we're like, okay, we want the truth about money now. We want the truth about our energy. And then Bitcoin aligns with things in physics, like thermodynamics, where, it can't be created or destroyed. So those are very fascinating topics, but I think a lot of us either have someone that we talk to, or we have an interest where it's some interest that we want to learn about the world around us. And when you find out about Bitcoin, you're finding out that aspect of how you spend your time, and what do you do, what do you earn for your time, and where do you put that medium of exchange that you've spent time, so that's what I think a lot of us get into it for that reason too.
I was listening to I think it was a snippet you put it, well, it was either a snippet or I might have accidentally listened to a Spaces thing for the first
I
time.
did. I posted a clip. I posted a clip of
Oh,
a face.
yeah. That's right. It was you talking, and you were talking about the, or somebody was talking about the Bitcoin being part of the universe.
Yes.
And I thought that's sort of correct, because if Bitcoin is math, or math as you say over there, then the universe works basically on maths and all. But then I started actually thinking it works on our maths. How do we know our maths is correct? Then I did a little bit of research, and we know our maths is correct because we can prove it, because 1 + 1 does equal 2. And you go from there, and then so long as that works out, then the next thing works out. So the maths is generally correct, unless we come across something that's we've never seen or heard of before. So it's not just part of the universe, it's actually a unique collaboration between human ingenuity and the universe. Because you the math side of it, you could argue, is the universal side of it, the universe, because it works on the laws of what the same thing, the same stuff the universe works on. But then you've got the rules and the protocol, and that's all man-made by the genius we know as Satoshi, whoever he is or she is or they are. So yeah, it's like a collaboration between the two, and it just works perfectly.
Yes, it is. It's stunning, like how it is perfection. It's like a masterpiece. It's like another dimension. You know, like Bitcoin, how Michael Saylor talks about it being like the cyberspace, like Manhattan in cyberspace or something. So it's like when you think of cyberspace, you think of regular space and the world around us, but cyberspace is this new dimension, and Satoshi figured out a way to tie that dimension to the 3D world. So it's just incredible. So I can't wait to dive into that more.
I always hesitate to say the word perfect, but it just does. Since I've known about it, I cannot find a single thing I can argue with about it. There's nothing I can say about it that isn't right. I try to find things, and I can't.
It's like people that are ghost hunters. Like I've watched some ghost hunter shows, and they try to go, sleeping overnight at ghost at haunted houses, and they try to debunk, the noises they hear and things that happen. So that's how I think like skeptical people like us, like my group, the Paranoid Bitcoin Anarchists, we're skeptical about any other centralized coin that comes out. We're skeptical about people lying to us and rug pulls, but we're also skeptical about just even when we first heard about Bitcoin. The reason we got into it is because we were unsure about what was being told to us, and we are questioning things. So when you find out about Bitcoin, you do think, what could be wrong with this? And we do like to have debates with other people to see if they can tell us something that would maybe convince us that it's not amazing. And even when we think about I think I read something in your post about the only way that Bitcoin would go down, like the network, as if the entire internet were to go down. But I've even mentioned that when I hear that brought up, I mentioned that Bitcoin's entire blockchain is broadcast to space through, I think, Blockstream and maybe other things. But it's broadcast to space. So the minute the internet comes back online, Bitcoin gets sent back down to all the computers again. So it's never gone unless the internet is completely gone. And then we have bigger problems than where's your Bitcoin at that point?
Well, I think even with the internet gone, I read somewhere that you can transact in Bitcoin on radio waves.
I have heard that too. Yes.
So it's even got that way of doing things, although I dare say that would be an enormous pain in the ass
Yeah.
to do, but possible still.
I just think if our entire internet were gone for good, then yeah, we'd have to literally start civilization over again. So it would be really hard to do anything. So I don't think that's when people worry about what would happen to your money. Well, what would you do with dollars then? Like, would that be, I mean,
If that's gone, then everything else has gone with it anyway. So, to think of something to actually break Bitcoin, you actually have to think of the completely implausible. So the fact of us never having an internet ever again, it's an implausible thing. It just won't happen. But that's one of the only things you can think of that can break potentially Bitcoin. And like I say, even then, you can transact in Bitcoin with radio waves. So I've read. I don't know if you can actually do that, but I have read it.
Another thing that I think about is when people bring up the quantum computing thing, they think, oh, that's going to break the blockchain. But I think that the Satoshi thought of that too, because he thought about the difficulty adjustment, and that happens every 10 minutes, right? Every 10 minutes when the blocks are created. So the entire global Bitcoin network, what that means for people is that don't understand is that Satoshi, the creator of Bitcoin, the anonymous creator of Bitcoin, created a, like in his code, he made something called a difficulty adjustment. If quantum computing were to be able to solve a Bitcoin block faster, he wanted to keep the playing field even so that if people with the most money and the most power create the fastest computer, they won't be able to mine the whole rest of the Bitcoin in the next 4 years. If a block were to be completed however many minutes faster, the entire network would adjust to make it that much more complicated to keep the blocks at 10 minutes apart.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating that you thought of that.
We experienced a difficulty adjustment fairly recently, or a good example of it, when there was an empty block.
Oh, yes.
Back not that long ago, was it? There was an empty block. Difficulty adjustment.
I didn't exactly understand what that meant. All I knew was that the fees were cheaper because it wasn't a filled block with transactions.
That's right. Yeah. It confused me a little bit because it's the first time I've ever seen. I use the, I don't know if you know of them, time chain stats.
Yes.
I use that dashboard on my computer pretty much constantly. And it's the first time I've ever seen it. It was literally, there was an empty block there. I thought,
Thought it had happened. When I saw that happen, it was on X, people were posting about it, but it's happened before, I guess, but not many times.
You also kind of wonder what was the reason, because there'll be a backlog of transactions, won't there?
Yes.
So did they decide to clear them for some reason, or
I don't know how it happened.
I don't understand.
I feel like I would have to, if anyone knows the answer, that it'd be nice to have that in the comments in this video. That would be nice to understand what happened with that. But I feel like it was almost like too slow of a time, like where the price, you know how like volatility is vitality, they say. So you get a lot of price movement and you get a lot of highs and lows, and that causes a lot of transactions back and forth because there's a lot of buyers and sellers. So part of my idea about it is that maybe there was such little price action going on at the time that it happened. I feel like I remember it being sort of boring, if you will. Maybe, you know, leverage traders weren't sure. You know, they don't want to start trading high leverage and not knowing if it was going up or down because it was just kind of staying still for a bit.
Yeah, kind of a stalemate.
So I wonder if that was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it was interesting though to see.
Mm-hmm. But I do want to ask you about how you feel about your post when you wrote about Bitcoin being a rebel, because I do think about that too. I think of Bitcoin as a rebel, and I think that you called it unstoppable, relentless, and transformative.
Yeah,
I love
which
that.
Which is all the features of a rebel. I actually see, I mean, I see myself and I see most other Bitcoiners as rebellious people because they ask questions. They stand up. They won't sit in a room full of people in a meeting somewhere and just nod along like everyone else does, because that's what they're meant to do. They'll raise their hand and ask the question that everybody else is thinking, but nobody else asks because they just want to sit there and be the nodding dog type of thing. Mm-hmm. But the rebellious people, they'll put their hand up, and that's what I see in a lot of Bitcoiners. And I think that's probably the reason they found Bitcoin in the first place. It's because they were actually searching for answers for things, and then you either stumble across it or you hear about it because you've generally asked a few questions, and then you start to learn about it. So, but I see a lot of my rebellious side in what Bitcoin does, because it does the same thing. It walks into a room and it asks different questions of people, and it tells them their way of doing things is wrong, even though they thought all along is right. And it comes along and says, well, no, actually, it's all wrong. And it teaches everyone else it's all wrong too. Because when you look into Bitcoin, you start learning more about money and how money works. So it's really quite a teacher, Bitcoin, as well as the rebel in the system, as I call it now. The only reason I call it rebel in the system is because now we got the strategic reserve. I think, actually, Texas, I said the other day, was the first to get a strategic reserve, but I read, I think it was this morning, somebody said it hasn't passed. Somebody says it's passed locally, but it still needs to go to the Senate to get approval. I don't know if that's right or not.
I'm not sure. I thought it had passed as well. One thing I will say about this strategic, these are my thoughts on it, but I'm sure you might agree. As exciting as it was when we heard the news that it was actually passed, I mean, that's a huge step for global adoption for Bitcoin, because it is just a better financial instrument, and it's a good base layer for a new financial system. So we're, you know, you can't be upset about it because it's kind of inevitable that would have to be the case. But when I kept hearing about, you know, the strategic reserve being postponed, or when I heard about states just dragging their feet on it, because I just thought governments, they're too big, they're too slow. People can't all agree at the same time. They need to wait for everybody to learn, understand it, and then vote on it. And I hate to say it, but a lot of the politicians are a lot older, and they're not able to try to understand new things, or don't want to. So I just was thinking that the whole separation of money and state, I'm like, the longer they drag their feet, we're going to witness that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I really didn't care. I'm like, if they do it, if they don't, great. You know, Bitcoin's going to still grow the way it will. It will just give regular people, plebs, more of a chance to accumulate before more nation states and governments do. So it would be great if more people just got up and just bought, you know, $100 worth of Bitcoin today and just sat on it. You know what I mean? If people just did that, just go get some before they all start buying it up. But
the great thing about Bitcoin, though, is that regardless of what anyone does, so regardless of whether a government approves of it, disapproves of it, whether people buy it, don't buy it, whether you buy $1 million worth of it or $100 worth of it, Bitcoin doesn't care. It just still does what it does. It just carries on going forward. Just perfect. It's the perfect thing to have because nobody controls it.
And that's why with all the, when you call Bitcoin a rebel, it reminds me of when Bitcoin just does what it does. It's because, you know, with all the emotion that goes into like people trading Bitcoin or kind of FOMOing into it, maybe like overbuying and not fully understanding it when they do that. Because, you know, when you buy a large amount, when you have the funds, when you understand it, you're not afraid because you know where it's going long term. But people, when they're first getting into it, they buy a little too big of an amount and they're nervous about it. They watch the price, they get scared, they sell. So there's so much emotion when it comes to if you're trading Bitcoin instead of just saving your money in Bitcoin, just putting it in there as averaging in money and just putting it aside. It's like your savings account and you're supposed to look at it in a long-term way. But when there's this human emotion involved, I feel like Bitcoin is like, I'm still going every 10 minutes. There's a new block. I haven't been stopped since I was created. I don't care what's happening, whether you're scared or you're happy or whatever's the case, like I'm going to keep going, you know? So it's like, doesn't care whether we're afraid or happy or whatever. It's just, it's going to do its thing and there's no stopping. It's like, you can't stop the train.
Literally, it is literally indestructible and unstoppable. And the other thing is set to do what it's going to do. We all know the end point. So we all know there will be 21 million, or we all know there is 21 million, and we all know it's not going to go beyond 21 million. And we know roughly the date at which it'll get to the 21 million. It's just so consistent, not like anything we've experienced, be the complete opposite of the stuff we have now, which you don't know from one day to the next what it's doing. There could be more inflation tomorrow, less inflation tomorrow, highly likely not less inflation actually. The price of this could be higher, the price of that could be higher. You got banks, you can have your account frozen any minute, or you could go to, you want to buy something relatively expensive and your bank asks you questions as to what you're doing with your own money, you know, that type of thing. Banks is the other thing as well.
Yeah.
My main reason for being in Bitcoin is all to do, it's not the money, it's the idea of it, and it's the freedom. And it's the possibility, although I don't think it'll ever happen because they'll jump on board with Bitcoin, it was the possibility of getting rid of banks altogether. for me, because we've had experiences with banks personally and with the business that we've got, which was another reason for looking into Bitcoin, actually. Where with frozen accounts, PayPal in particular, we used PayPal for probably 8-9 years. Regularly, it was turning over hundreds of thousands every month. And then one day, it took one of our customers to tell us that they couldn't pay anymore on our website. So when we looked into it, we then discovered PayPal had frozen our account.
Yes.
And literally, all our cash was in there, because we would generally take the cash out every week and do the banking, because it all worked fine. But when it stopped, it had a couple of hundred thousand in there that we then couldn't use, couldn't touch. We had no method of accepting payments from customers, because we just put everything through PayPal. And it left us in a right mess. The cash flow had gone. We then had to rush around to try and find another merchant that we could take payments with, which in our business isn't easy, because not all of them are on board with electronic cigarettes. So it was really difficult. And
PayPal, you were never told from PayPal why they did this?
Only when we asked them, when we tried to sort it out, only then they told us they'd frozen the account. They told us we couldn't appeal.
Appeal your own money.
They told us we couldn't appeal, and they also wouldn't give us a reason. So they wouldn't say what the reason was. They just said it was a policy breach.
But did you eventually get it unfrozen?
Not unfrozen. No. They got rid of us completely. By that time, we didn't need them anyway, because we'd already worked out other ways of doing it.
But how did you get the?
They kept it for 6 months. They said their procedure on a frozen account is to do an internal investigation, of which we're not part. And when we raised the money in there, it was over, I don't know if it was a couple of hundred thousand, it was over 100,000 certainly. They said, oh, well, procedure is that gets frozen until we've concluded our review. I said, how long does your review take? And they said, oh, it can take 6 months.
And they don't even ask you to help with that review process. Like, what was the problem the account was flagged? Well, nothing.
I don't even think there was a review. They'd already decided they didn't want our business anymore. And that was it.
Wow. But
6 months later, and 6 months to the day, we got their money back.
It's almost like they tried to destroy the business. You know what I mean? It's like they were like, hey, maybe we don't like the idea of electronic cigarettes, or they said we don't want to continue. We just don't want this business to be a thing. So they just froze it, thinking that maybe that might strangle your business and close you out, you know?
They nearly did destroy it, because our business is, we're reliant on our regular customers. So they're constantly coming back all the time. And if they can't get the product, they will have to, because it's nicotine,
right?
They have to look somewhere else. It's not like they can just stop using for a minute. They're addicted to the nicotine still. So they need that product. And if a week goes by and then you have those customers who can't use your website because they can't pay at the moment, then they just go somewhere else. And then the risk is you lose the customers. And because we can't advertise, we're not allowed to, there's no way of us getting any customers back in.
So you were attacked from two angles. You were attacked from institutions when it came to your income of your business. You were attacked by advertisers telling you can't advertise for your business. You lost trust from two major angles when it came to your livelihood. You know, so it's no wonder you went looking for, you were rebellious. You know, you were pissed off at what they were doing and how your business was being treated and your livelihood was being treated. So it's just completely wrong. I cannot believe that. And it's no wonder you went to find out to actually learn about Bitcoin. Because when you find out that it's something where you can become your own bank And it's something where you don't have to answer for where you're sending your money or what you're doing with your money. They can't freeze it for you if you have it in cold storage. For those of you that don't know, cold storage means that you have transferred your Bitcoin out of the original exchange that you purchased it from, and you send it to a hardware device where you only have access to that device.
I got four of those now.
Yes. Which ones do you use?
The one I've got the most on, because I've got the most trust in it, is the BitBox Bitcoin only one. And then I've got Blockstream Jade, Trezor, and a Ledger. The Ledger one was the first one I got, actually, because that one seemed the easiest one to use. But I use the Ledger one. I keep a small amount on the Ledger because it's handy, because it comes with the Ledger card. So if you ever need to use some for daily spending, it's quite handy for me.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that about the ledger. Yeah, I have the ledger and I have the Trezor now. So, I've heard about the cold card too. I was interested in finding out more about that. But yeah, it's always worth looking at which cold storage options there are to be your own bank. So, that's definitely something that people who have been messed with in their time in this world don't want to be messed with, and that's why you self-custody your own coins. And I think it's interesting how sometimes people bring up, oh, but I've heard stories where people lost their password and they have no access to the money. And I said, that's why back in the day, it's almost a blessing and a curse when you get into Bitcoin too early, because the people that get into it too early, they self-custody their coins, they have this password, but it's worth nothing. They have, 5,000 coins or something, and they just think it's like dirt, it doesn't matter. You lose the password because you don't care about it. And then, but now at least when we're buying it at the time that we're purchasing, saving our money in it, not technically buying it, but we're saving our money in this network, we appreciate it because we know that it's valuable and it's growing in value, and we understand its strength. And it's at a good time. So when people worry, oh, am I buying too high? It's like, no, at least you understand its value and you understand that it's important. And you will take care of that password and you'll keep it safe. You know, because when you buy it when it's dirt cheap, you think, oh, I don't know, I lost that thing. And now you're gonna kick yourself, for not having millions of dollars now,
Well, the way I look at it now is maybe it's not the way I looked at it when I started, but certainly now is that is on that little drive is the most valuable thing on earth, which it is. That's what Bitcoin is. As far as I know, it's the only scarce thing we've ever had. And people say gold is scarce, but it's not really, because someone could dig up or find mountains worth of gold tomorrow that's yet to be discovered. Or Elon Musk could send a rocket up to an asteroid that's made of gold,
You're right.
possibly. Or
It's
send people
true.
into space mining for stuff, you know?
It's so
So
true.
yeah, the money aspect of it wasn't really it for me. It was always the control, the fact that I can access it whenever I want. I can spend it if I want to, which I don't really, however I want and however much I want, and I can take it anywhere, literally anywhere. I don't need anyone's permission. I don't need to get frisked at the airport. If you try and take £10,000 in cash through an airport, good luck. I mean, it's rubber glove time when you try and do that, I think. So
It's true. I mean, it's your money and you have to be told what you could do with your money. It's just and people believe that that's a normal thing. We've been brought up in this world where we think that we only understand banks, we only understand credit and loans and debt. And I feel like you start to forget that, you can just save money because nobody can save money with the inflation rate. You're just either putting it in the bank and the CDs are pointless. So it's just like everything is, giving your money for someone else to control. And you just give it to them, you have no access. So everyone's just used to not having control over it and not knowing what to do with it really. You just trust an institution to try to invest for you. And it's we're coming to an age or a time in history where, you would have to go to a financial advisor to say, how do I plan for retirement? What do I do? And it's really incredible that for those of us who found out about Bitcoin and care about our future, our kids' future, our family, anything, ourselves for retirement, whatever the reason, you don't have to sit down with a financial advisor to give you some stock method of getting some kind of ETF, that then you one day have to sell to pay 40% tax on. It's like you can have Bitcoin and you could save in Bitcoin and you don't need that financial advisor anymore. And you can just see your time saved and growing exponentially, in if it's not a short time preference. And you get to be able to, I think lately we've been saying in our community, because we all say never sell your Bitcoin, which none of us like to do, but I think you eventually get to a point where you live off your Bitcoin. You're not you're then you're spending it. Then as you need it, you spend some, but you're not just and none of us I feel like a lot of us don't live these extravagant lifestyles, not too many of us. Like we just want to be happy and free. We're not trying to show off, we're not trying to be like crypto bro, we're not trying to,
Well, I would say though it's on the system we're used to, or with the money before I knew anything about Bitcoin. I didn't ever value money at all. So I never saved. I never put it away for anything. I would always use it, spend it, do what I wanted to do, buy things. Never really saved. But that's because I didn't value it. I saw money as, well, it's worthless anyway. It's just paper IOUs. They make up the numbers on a computer somewhere. Just spend it. Just you need it to live, but just enjoy it. But since Bitcoin, it's now the other way around. Because I now value it and I see what it is and I see it is worth something, I want to keep it. And a good example of that actually is my house, because I, for the last year, have been trying to do my flooring all around the house. I was going to renew the flooring. And I got sort of part way through doing it. And then I said, because I put an amount aside in, on my ledger card actually to use that to pay for the flooring that was going to come in. But I've never gotten to do it because every time I try and do it, the value of Bitcoin kept going up. So I then didn't want to use the money I'd set aside in Bitcoin to do my flooring because it kept going up. So it sort of teaches you something about. Because you've learned it's valuable, you then don't want to waste it.
Yes. And then you realize what's important. You're like, do it. Will this floor, will this thing or this object or this thing that I'm buying make me happy? Like, well, do I need this thing or do I just kind of want this thing? It's like, will this fulfill me or will it
Oh,
fulfill me
geez.
more? Oh, there's your cat. That's so cute. Is that George or the other one?
That's Bruce.
Oh, that's Bruce. That's so cute. Very cute
The other
cat.
ones behind.
Okay. But yeah, I think that it definitely teaches us to appreciate and to think about what's really important in life, and is it more of our health and having time with our loved ones and free time to take care of our mental health and our physical health. Like those things are important more than like buying new stuff. And it's nice to have new things in it. I think a clean space, clutter free, is more better for your mind and for your health than it is to have more things. And like I don't care if it's something brand new and shiny. Like I just even when it comes to a car, some people like I heard somebody post one day, what would you do? Would you buy a new car, take out a loan and pay for it slowly, or would you just buy it outright so that you don't have to pay for interest, so that you well, like what's a better way to buy Bitcoin in the meantime? Like what would you do if you need a new car? And I'm like, I would just fix the car I have. I'm like, I would just like try to fix that sucker and keep driving it. Like I don't need it right now. I'm like, how bad is the
Absolutely.
car? That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah. Well, no, I had a similar thing with my car. I've actually recently had car problems. The alternator on my car went and I had to go and get it fixed. But when it was getting fixed, when I got the bill, it was just under £1,000 altogether to get it sorted out. I immediately thought, that's £1,000 I can't buy Bitcoin. So I thought, I'm then looking at my car and accusing my car almost of
Yeah.
costing me Bitcoin that I could have
Right.
bought. So
That's so funny.
I've even started thinking, do I even need a car? Can I maybe get rid of the car if I don't need it and then use the money from the car to buy more Bitcoin? That's how extreme it gets. It almost gets obsessive. But then, like I was saying with the flooring, if at some point I will do my flooring.
Well,
But what?
I think it's hard for us to not be that way because we understand that when you see that Bitcoin is growing faster than all other technologies have grown, it's growing faster in user adoption than the internet, than phones did, than any of that stuff. And you know that we're at this point where it's like this, that technology curve when you look at charts and how technology has grown over the years. And then you see Bitcoin on this point where it's about to start just going vertical. You know, it's like even then, even as the price is rising, it's like, okay, you can still kind of average in a small portion of your fiat earnings and just keep saving in it, you know, whatever it is. If it's going to go up a little bit, come down, we're still going to do it. Like, we don't care. It's going to keep going up. We're still going to do it, average into it. It's like just like almost historic and almost like a rebel thing to do to be like still like a big F you, kind of like we're still buying, $100 here and there, whatever it is, but I feel like we're at that point. We're at that point where we feel, even though the price, people still freak out here and there about price action. In the big picture, when Bitcoin's $1 million, you're not going to be thinking, oh man, did I buy it at 85,000 or 95,000? Or did I buy it at 105 or 85? Like, who cares? Like, it's just.
It amazes me there's still people waiting for it to go down further to buy
Yeah.
more.
And
Well,
it
just
might.
buy
And
it.
if it does,
It's
keep working. Yeah.
80,000, 100,000, 150,000. Just buy it because it's going to the million.
Right. And they've said that people, when they look at their long-term purchase history, when you average out all your buys over time, it ends up being like at a median level anyway. So it's like just kind of average in whenever you can, and just get whatever you can. But yeah, those 20,000 here and there, when it's going to be 1 million, $13 million, and whatever Saylor says, 15, 20 years, whatever he says. It's like, are you going to care that you bought it at 20,000 more or less?
No, not at all. Although I do my whenever I've done my buying, it's all I always do a lump. I'll do a big lump of buying. I tend not to do the DCA thing, but because at the moment I probably maxed myself out on borrowing the dirty, filthy fiat stuff in order to buy the Bitcoin in bigger chunks. I'm now thinking I also need to start DCA because I'm now short of being able to get that much more.
Right. Well,
I'm about 150% all in,
great.
and probably more.
Isn't that funny? And you're still was looking around like, what else can I like? That's why when Sailor made that joke, like selling a kidney, you got Peter Schiff super pissed, which I thought was funny. He's like, you're telling people to sell their kidneys. Like, not saying to actually go sell your kidney, but I mean, he's telling you that, like, hey, if you haven't done what you could, to get this scarce asset, you probably should. Because when we were talking about banks earlier and how we don't believe that banks will be around for a long time, like we've seen so many banks get like go under, and then now when it's time for Doge and Department of Government Efficiency, and we have banks that are going to start to fail again, like that usually happens, more and more banks will fail. You're not going to have the government step in and bail everybody out like before they were getting bailed out left and right since 2008. Who knows if that'll happen? And if it does, it'll just continue to be more inflation. And if it doesn't, then they're going to fail and you might lose all your money or not have access to your cash. So it's like, that's why I think what Michael Saylor is doing with MicroStrategy is interesting, because I saw a post today that somebody said Satoshi, I think, or was it HAL? But I think Satoshi predicted MicroStrategy, it's not called. But they say he predicted Strategy one day, and it's like they're going to be a Bitcoin treasury bank. They're a Bitcoin company. They want to be a treasury. They want to be a Bitcoin treasury. So as these other banks kind of like drop like flies,
That
MicroStrategy will be there and it'll be the new foundation of our banking system.
is the moment I'm looking forward to, actually. I will, I hope I'm there for that day where we see Strategy becoming a bank, because then you start to see the tide completely turn on traditional banking. I think there's already, is it Leiden or Lender or something like that is called? Leiden, I think, LEDN. And they already
Oh,
do
yes, I saw about that. I don't know
loans,
too much about that.
Bitcoin loans and so on. But I think there's a high percentage charge, so it's not perfect, but you can actually use, so you don't have to sell your Bitcoin, you can actually use whatever Bitcoin you got as to borrow more. And they'll do it like a loan to value, like a mortgage. They'll lend you a percentage of your Bitcoin. It's win-win for people like that, because they charge a percentage, they're being paid back, and if someone doesn't pay them back, they hold the Bitcoin anyway.
Yeah, that's
As a
true.
lender, you can't really go wrong there. It's kind of perfect. You don't lose out, there's no risk.
That's exciting. It's a very exciting time. Yeah, and we'll see what's going on today. I see the price is still dipping, so that means Bitcoin is still on sale. As of today's recording, which it won't be posted today, but I think it's around 78 to 79,000 right now. So we're at like a sale. Yeah, so I mean it's like and I recently did something that I love that I've shared with people. My Bitcoin chart, I usually would have the traditional red and green candles. But I was taught by somebody in our community how to change those candles to different colors. So I have the white candles instead of the green when the price is going up. So they're all white when the price is up. And then when the price is going down, instead of red, I've changed them to orange. Because I love orange, for Bitcoin. So it's like when the price is going down, I see a
Maybe
lot of
because
orange.
that's the sale.
It makes me happy. Yeah, I just think, oh, that's a signal to buy more because it's down so much right now. And I think orange doesn't scare me because I love orange anyway, and it's a signal to buy more. So I think
I
that's like
think
a really nice way to look at my charts now.
slightly frustrating for me at the moment, because it's down, I would normally be buying, but because at the moment I've put myself to the maximum with what I can borrow, probably. I'd probably maybe get away with a little bit more, but then I'm sort of close to the wire on my monthly budget. So I've stopped for a minute, and I've eased off so I can just be careful. But I bought, well, I borrowed another 12,000 pounds when it hit. I think it was at 103,000.
Well, I mean, we all bought. I bought it 103. I bought it I think 105. I bought it, ups and downs all the way. I bought as it's been coming down too, and it's like you don't know in the short term what it's gonna do. But that's why no matter what, whether you can get some kind of loan, but if you can just keep working and proof of work it, like keep doing your job, keep going to work, keep making money, and instead of wasting that money like we kind of felt like we were doing in our early years, just spending it because we just didn't know how to save it. At least we know how to save it now, and we know where to put it in order to build and not just blow our money on stupid things. So it's like
There's
it teaches you that.
another aspect I just thought of, actually, which we tried with our business, because we're an online only business, so we obviously take card payments on the website, the back end of the website, and over the phone as well. We did experiment by putting a Bitcoin to accept Bitcoin. It would generally wouldn't work for our customers anyway, because our customers are of a certain demographic. They're older to quite elderly in a lot of cases. It's not something they're ever going to do, probably. But we had a bit of pushback, and it's why we don't actually, because we'd love to accept Bitcoin, but it's not popular enough anyway to be worth doing. But we had pushback, because when we had the Bitcoin accepted sign on the website, we had customers email us to tell us it's a scam.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and they thought
Crazy.
because we had that on the website, they thought we were scamming them.
No.
I know.
That's crazy.
So it sort of backfired a little bit, and we sort of, I mean, we dropped
That's
it.
That's how early we are.
Yeah, yeah. But this is why I'm wondering how, I think I put a post on the other day, I think it was yesterday, actually. How do we convince, it's easy to convince the people who are looking for it, but how do we actually convince the people who aren't looking for it?
My answer for that is, in a way, there is a lot of, let's say, the older generation of people that are used to saving their money in the stock market with financial advisors, with stock markets, with retirement accounts, whatever they have going on. A lot of that money, that wealth of the world, is locked up with baby boomer age and older. A lot of that, the wealth that's locked up, it's not going to just transfer over to Bitcoin. So that's where these ETFs, where even though we don't buy the ETFs, we buy Bitcoin and we self-custody Bitcoin. But there's people who just, it would be too much to learn and understand. But a lot of, like, the BlackRocks of the world and asset managers of the world, when they start suggesting that everyone put 2% of their portfolio into Bitcoin, then people are going to be having it without understanding that they even own it. And they're going to say, oh, wow, my retirement account is doing great. I'm making money. And they're going to be happy that they're gaining more profit than they had been in the past. And they won't really understand why. Because when they give you your statement, it's not really it's not a transparent statement where it tells you exactly what made you what money. They just tell you, oh, you did great right now. You know, you're getting this much. So, but people will be doing well, but their money will be going into Bitcoin and it'll be a mainstream adoption situation, whether they know it or not. So I think that's what's happening with this Bitcoin Strategic Reserve right now, and with other countries doing theirs and all the states having their own. As everybody's implementing these reserves and seeing it as a legit thing and not a scam, you know, they're recognizing it as a digital gold. The people that don't understand it, that you can't convince, they're going to be convinced because they won't even know it. It'll be happening regardless, you know, whether they understand it or not. So
something my brother's always said, actually, he said they won't even know they've got it. He said it'll be in their pension funds. It'll be making them money. They won't know about it, but they'll be really happy about it because it'll make them really good pensions. Which is another thing I'm doing, actually. The only thing I've got left really to put into Bitcoin, and it's not actually going into Bitcoin, but I had a pension from the Lloyds Bank that I used to work for many years ago, but I didn't realize I had it. So it was sat there doing nothing, but it amounted to a reasonable amount of money sat there. So I've literally just changed it now. I didn't realize you could transfer them into a SIP. And in a SIP, you get to choose your pension investment. So obviously, when it's transferred, I'll be putting it into Strategy.
Right, that's amazing.
Yeah, my pension will then be effectively Bitcoin as well, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. It'll at least be a Bitcoin bank.
Yeah, brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've talked about a lot of great stuff today. And if that's if there's anything else you want to talk about before we end our podcast,
no, I shall relieve you of my voice and face.
Don't say that. This has been really, really, really fun. People are going to love this episode, and I had a really great time talking to you. I learned so much. That whole thing that happened with PayPal and your company was insane.
It was one thing I wanted to add, actually. Yeah. Because I watched your video with your husband and friend, I wanted to say about your husband. When I was in school, I've got this rebellious nature. So in school, I wasn't the best. I was always polite, but I wasn't interested in being taught because I just didn't want to listen. But it was mainly because the teachers were useless. They didn't actually want to be teachers. They were just fell into being a teacher. But hearing your husband speak actually is what a teacher should be. Because he's quite passionate about what he does. It came across. And he wants to teach for the right reasons. He wants to teach kids good things.
Yes.
Which I just wanted to comment on that because I thought that was excellent. You rarely do you see a teacher, this side of the pond at least anyway, who has that passion for teaching. I think that's a large problem in the education system. You need all teachers like that, and you need to get rid of the ones who are just doing the daily turn up, open your textbook, there you go.
Yeah, he's got a good heart. I think you have to have a good heart for that, and actually have that's where you get the passion from. And he definitely has a really big heart, and he cares, you know, and he sees things that are wrong with the system too. So that's what makes him a good Bitcoiner, because he sees problems. You know, not everything's perfect. He's not a robot, you know, and he does love his job, and he loves the students. He just wishes there was things that he could do differently, but he's trying his best to be a good teacher for the students he has. So, and thank you for saying that so much. He's going to love to hear that.
Yes.
I appreciate you bringing that up and thinking to say that. Thank you.
He deserves to hear it. It was a nice thing to actually hear someone being passionate about being a teacher.
Thank you so much.
It's all right.
Thanks a lot. Hey, I can't wait to post this episode. I am so much looking forward to everyone hearing our talk. And thank you so much for doing this with me.
You're very welcome.
Thanks. Have a great day. Thank you. Take care.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.